When I decided to do this podcast, Jeff Carlin said it would be a good idea if once in a while I talked about what really was on my mind. Not the news, not making the news or breaking it, but what was on my mind along with the column. And there have been snatches here and there, little bits, but the other day, three great newspaper men leaving the Tribune, Bruce Dold, the editor, managing editor Peter Kendall, and John McCormick, who you know is the editorial page editor. There's about 150 years of experience there. Things change. I know, I get it. You know, I'm in the news business. News every day. Man bites dog, I get it. But for the Tribune to lose three great people like that, there was some anxiety among the staff because people are thinking, well, what's going to happen next? A colleague of mine, elegant writer, put out a tweet saying, never trust institutions because institutions don't trust you, or something like that. And I think, respectfully, I think she's got it all wrong. It's not about the institution. It's about our personal relationship with you. That's why you get up in the morning. That's why you write. You write not for a place in history. You don't have time to think about it. You write because I know some of you are going to read it, and some of you will hate it, and some will like it. Just days ago, I was joking with somebody that no matter what happens, I'll be the guy to turn out the lights. But now I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know is that every day we get up, we find out what's going on, we give you a history of the day in Chicago, the history of the world in one day. But when I heard the news that my friend Bruce Dold and McCormick and Kendall were leaving, I just didn't feel like writing. I know I'm supposed to write. I'm a professional. There's a hole in the paper. You fill it. But I just didn't feel like it. I went down to the basement. I started looking at these old books. Old books to throw away. Old books that don't mean anything to people anymore. Just toss them in a bin. But I can't do that. I can't throw them away. To throw an old book away is like cutting off your hand. So I wrote that column about the books, but really I was thinking about something else. In the back of my mind, I was thinking about the Tribune, about great newspaper men. Now it's another day. I could have written about Columbus Day and how the city of Chicago is getting rid of Columbus Day for Indigenous People Day. Another slap in the face of Italian Americans. And then the Italian Americans are going to be upset, and then the Indigenous people will want more from them. Columbus Day, you know when it began? My father-in-law was from New Orleans. He was a Sicilian kid, an orphan, but he ended up in New Orleans because there were a lot of Italians there. At the turn of the century, 11 Italian Americans and Italians were strung up and lynched in New Orleans. Did you know that? A mob grabbed them, an anti-Italian mob grabbed them, hung them, men and boys. Lynching. Men and boys, little boys. President Benjamin Harrison declared that Columbus Day would be a national holiday in response to that. To tell people, yeah, they belong. You belong, Italians. Now the indigenous people and the left have gotten rid of them because the Italian Americans are symbols of the Western European. But you know what? It turns out that Western Europeans were the indigenous people. Thousands and thousands of years ago, stone implements, tools from Western Europe were found in America by archaeologists recently. So I don't know who the indigenous person is. maybe the ancestors of the Italian Americans were here, and then later they discovered, I don't know. I just figured, let everybody have their day. Let everybody have their day. I don't see what's wrong with it. You know, it's not just about Italian beef sausage and sandwiches, right? What's wrong with having your day? Columbus was a great explorer. He opened this world. Can you imagine if there was no Columbus, if we never discovered America? What would have happened? You wouldn't have cell phones, I'll tell you that much. So every day there's a new story, and you get up and you write it or talk about it. I just wonder what Chicago would be like without a newspaper, like the Tribune. I mean, there would be something, some propaganda sheet created by some political organization. I'm talking about a real newspaper that you can trust. It's made up of people that bring their experience and their guts and their heart, and they break every day. They break them on that wheel, that deadline, wheel of time, the deadline, always crushing, always there. And I guess I'm going to keep writing for as long as I can, because I love it. I love telling stories. We've got some stories today. We're going to talk to Bill Conway, one of the candidates for Cook County State's Attorney. We've asked Kim Fox to be here, but I guess she couldn't make it. We've had Donna Moore here. And now we're going to have Conway. No, I'm not going to have Fioretti. Okay, Bob, I like you. You're a nice guy. But no, okay? Please. Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokon Show on WGN. And me, John Cass, husband, father, a man who can't throw his books away, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Member of its editorial board. And you're listening to this and thinking, quit complaining, Cass. You've got the best job in the world, and you're right. And I'm going to hold it for as long as I can. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So, Jeff, are you sad that Chicago got rid of Columbus Day? That the left finally took over Chicago? Now we're not going to have Columbus Day.
Finally took over?
Right. Well, it did.
Yeah. I don't know. Finally. In the monologue there, you made the great point that this wasn't about holding Columbus himself up high. It was about opening arms and making groups feel welcome. And that's the irony of this whole situation, which is, you aptly pointed out, that the irony of reducing a day, changing the name because you want to be inclusive to people who may have been wronged in the past.
Like the 11 Italians that were lynched.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. People don't know that.
Right.
And so or they don't say
guilty.
That.
You know, there's this guilt, and then, let's go on with it. I'm not Italian, but I don't feel, it doesn't matter who you are. You can appreciate the idea that, there was this group and there was this other group and one group came out on top. So, but after all this year, let's try to, but that's not the point. Like, that's not the point of Columbus Day.
You mean the point of destroying and eradicating it?
Right.
The point of eradicating it is that Columbus is the symbol of the West, of Western European progress over the world, and they can't stand it. And so other, maybe in the indigenous people don't like Columbus, but that's not what gives it the push. What gives it the push is the left hating Western man.
Yeah, I think you're going too deep on it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going too deep at all.
I think you're going too deep on it, John, because I think the history of this government, and we know this, this government, this the white man in this country who came in, pushed very hard to obliterate Native Americans, right? There's no doubt there.
The history of human beings throughout the world.
I don't go look that far. But the average person on the street,
They're illiterate. Their teachers taught them that Western European men were evil, so therefore they should be wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
That's what they were taught.
Yeah, but I don't buy that there's some like string pulling cabal of people who are like, we've got to do, you know, the white man from Western Europe has done too much, has taken too much from everybody else.
No, I think
it genuinely comes from people feeling guilt over stories that they were never told to them when they were younger or you know, not informed of.
Right.
And then that guilt has been co-opted into this movement.
Please don't put me in the position, my good friend Jeff Carlin, please don't put me in the position of defending the white man. That's a leftist construction right there.
Yeah.
And I won't tolerate it.
Well, that's
it
not offends, my point. That's offensive.
No, but the words that came out of your mouth were clear. So, no, I don't. I'm not in that position. I do note, though, that the history of the people of the world is that people fight over land. And if you don't have land, you're not a people.
Right.
And that's what it's always been. New technologies like the ancient chariot fighters in Egypt had an advantage over those who didn't have chariots, right? And so Egypt became a power. And it's about technology and the push of people.
Yeah, I mean, advancement, you know, time marches on, progress marches on.
Right. Change is constant. But the one thing about Columbus that people don't know, which bothers me that you don't know it, is that he was Greek. I always tell this to Betty. She doesn't believe me.
I don't think any Italian would believe you.
No Italians would believe me. And Louis Rego wouldn't believe me. And all my Italian friends don't believe me. But he apparently, his family came from Constantinople.
I don't think there is this ingrained deep sentiment that we have to undo all these things that the white men have done.
They don't realize it when they're screaming, but there are people who do realize, not the white man, for God's sake, but there are people who do realize they have to get rid of, they get rid of Shakespeare, they get rid of the Western canon in schools,
right,
at universities. They have, they get rid of, you know, I'm not saying topple. When are they going to start toppling the statues of Aristotle?
I know.
Next?
Well,
okay.
And that's the point. I mean, and that's your point is,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
While there is the people who I think who start these initial movements, which are often professors in colleges, like you alluded to, that have this understanding of history and feel like they're, you know, the scales are uneven. And
they want to erase.
Right. It. But that's where these things start. But to make those stories stick and to further their agenda, if you will, they play the soft card of, oh, look at all the horrible things that have happened. Look at all the things that were done. And that what leads us to where we are now. And it's, I don't think the average person who's like, oh, this is a good idea. I mean, look what happened to all the Indians.
That's why we have a Senate. Because we have a Congress, the Congress are the people that stir them up, and the Senate is supposed to hold them back.
Exactly.
Democratic race for state's attorney of Cook County on March 17th. The issues. Well, one of them, besides Jesse Smollett, which I just can't let go because you know why? It just explains Kim Fox so well. But the other issue is George Soros, $2 million dropped on Kim. She's part of this whole Soros network across the country. Progressive prosecutors I guess, hugging criminals, violent ones. The whole business of decarceration of jails is a noble one. The history of criminal justice system in the country is one that's twined with racism. Black and brown people have had an unfair shot for a long time. But on the other hand, what they're doing, Kim Fox, her boss, Tony Preckwinkle, and their little jester, Timmy Evans, at the chief judge, they're letting people out that shouldn't be out. Violent criminals are getting out. And who do they kill? They're not up in Lincolnwood. They're not up in Hinsdale. They're not out in Western Springs. They're not wreaking havoc in Homewood. No, on the west side and the south side. And the TV cameras roll up. And what do? They talk to the mommy, and the mom cries, "Why did they kill my son?" And nobody, because the TV people don't have the wherewithal to find out. Only the Tribune does. Was that shooter released on a gun charge just a couple weeks ago, getting caught with like a pistol or a handgun or a rifle and released out to shoot again because of decarceration? Because we're going to talk to the guy who maybe he can address all these issues. He's a young lawyer. His name's Bill Conway. He's running for state's attorney. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Bill.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
Man, did I talk a lot? I talk too much.
Not too bad, but I will say this. You know, we've seen a lot of crime happening on the CTA as of late. So I think, you know, that it has shown that crime is really, really portable all over the city and all over the county. And we need to be having a unified effort to get after it.
Let's talk about politics first. Kim Fox is the incumbent. She's the protege of Tony Preckwinkle. They've got the progressive unions with her. She has Bernie Sanders with her. It's like a lineup from like Marie Newman, another progressive heroine in Chicago in politics, who's running against Danny Lipinski. They line up and they come in and endorse. How's that affecting the race?
You know, I've never thought this race was going to come down to endorsements. I mean, incumbent Democrats tend to support incumbent Democrats. You know, and for the last over 6 months now, I've been going everywhere in this county talking about how we need to balance our criminal justice reform efforts and how we need to get after our gun crime epidemic by really trying to get at the root causes of the supply chain that brings these guns here. And also really how we have to get politics out of the office so we can really prosecute public corruption. I've been talking about that everywhere and it's really been resonating everywhere. And I'm proud of that.
But the simple math that I learned back in the 80s and your crackerjack staff of political experts that work with you understand, politics is about addition, but primaries are about subtraction. And look at what's going on. You've got Kim Fox relying on what she thinks will be a large African-American vote. There are several white candidates, I guess we could say, in the race. You, Donna Moore, who's been a guest here, Bob Fioretti and someone else, I guess. I don't know. Just the three of you, right? You look at the polling. Your polling just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Shows you're close to Kim Fox, but that Moore and Fioretti are pulling votes from you that if you had them, you might be even closer or above Kim Fox.
Well, it does... Our polling did show that we would win. We'd be up by 5 points in a two-way race. But I'm not, you know, there's such a large undecided portion of this race. And I want to say this, you know, I have not neglected any community. I'm going everywhere in this county, city, suburbs, south side, west side, north side, everywhere in this to get our message out. And everywhere we seem to be doing it, it's we've been well received, and I'm proud of that, you know, because I am running to be state's attorney for everybody. I'm not just running for some subset of folks.
I'm not asking on behalf of a subset.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is the real politics of Chicago. And it's difficult. It's difficult to talk around something. We should just talk. I just like to talk directly to it. Sure. And Kim Fox came in. I mean, why was she elected? She had no real credibility or no legal experience. She was Tony Preckwinkle's chief of staff. Jason Van Dyke, the police officer, shot Laquan McDonald 16 times. Rahm Emanuel sat on the video. I guess he's writing his own revisionist history now. And Kim Fox was elected, right?
Yeah.
That's how it worked.
Yeah.
So how's she done?
Well, certainly when you have, you know, we can't go around this without not talking about Jussie Smollett. And what you have there is certainly a situation where a politically connected Hollywood celebrity got unequal justice in a case where everybody was looking. And you also have a situation where clearly as a result of that, people don't trust the top prosecutor in this county. And the reason for that is she repeatedly, frankly, lied to the public on this. You know, she starting when she said she recused herself, but really when she said countless times, this is how the office always handles these cases. And that is simply not accurate, as Mr. Webb pointed out when he put forth his report last week, saying that the office could provide no evidence of somebody who had been treated similarly. But I saw it firsthand with my client, Candace Clark. I mean, Jussie essentially paid some money to get his case dismissed. And, you know, we went to court every month.
Tell us about Candace Clark.
She was charged with filing a false police report.
Who is she?
She is a young woman who was charged with filing a false police report. And she, a judge had said when she came before the court,
Judge Martin.
he said, you know, he asked the state's attorney, why are you making her go through all this when you let the other guy go? And she's charged with the same charge, albeit under a much less egregious set of facts. You know, that's exactly what he said.
Right.
So there was a small article in the paper about this. I remember reading and saying, huh, that's not right. Somebody ought to do something about that. So, you know, I was still thinking about it, you know, a few minutes later and called the public defender's office and represented her. You know, we were able to get her a slightly better deal than she had been offered up to that point, but still nothing compared to what he got, obviously. You know, and she just completed a rigorous diversion program, but we went to court every month for 8 months. She visited a probation officer during that time. She had to pay significant restitution. She had to be enrolled in GED classes. When she wanted to leave Cook County, we had to go get permission of a judge for her to do that. And it's not right that she had to go through all that, but I'm proud of her. She, you know, fought her way through the program, got through it, and successfully completed it. But nonetheless, it's not fair that the Hollywood connected celebrity gets one deal and the hourly wage worker gets another. And that's not right.
Obama White House connected celebrity. He sang very well at the Obama White House.
Yeah.
And Michelle, I remember writing a column on this. Did you ever see the video? And Michelle gets up on the stage, on the White House stage, and whispers into the President Obama's ear, and he's thanking everybody, and then he goes, "Oh yeah, and thanks to Jussie Smollett,
this young man."
I've never seen that. Sounds like some great footage almost. Though.
So would you have represented Candace if you weren't planning on running to?
Yeah, at that point, I hadn't decided if I was going to run or not, you know, when I saw that article and said, you know what, really somebody ought to step in and do that. And so, you know, that was how I came to get the case and proud that I, you know, represented somebody who clearly got unequal justice. And I'm proud of her that, you know, looking at this from her perspective, she had to read articles every day about what the other guy got to do. And she's, you know, has to diligently work her way through this program.
I mean, and she wasn't asked to go to Operation Push and sell tchotchke.
She did not.
Jesse Jackson Jr. action figures or whatever they sell.
Certainly, I wasn't. You know, I I'm obviously not familiar with what Jussie had to do, but I know that he did do 16 hours there. And, you know, interestingly, if she had not been able to maintain a job, she would have had to do, meaning my client would have had to do 96 hours of community service. And, that's simply not right. But you have the greater issue that people have clearly lost trust in the public's top prosecutor. But
here's the problem that I see a problem, guys. And this is for both of you, because Jeff, you're in the media, and you know I'm not. I'm just a
right.
Yeah, you've been not in the media right. for 40 years. I hear.
But here's the problem: Kim Fox comes when you ask her a question about this. Is a legitimate issue. This mm-hmm. Candace Clark thing and the unequal justice and the treatment of the politically connected. But yet, when she's asked the question, she's very smooth on an answer. She's got this smooth, silky way of saying, I don't mind Dan Webb looking at it, but how do you take it, Jeff? How do you see her that response? Is it impenetrable?
Yeah, no, it is. Every time I hear that response, and she came in and talked to Roe, and you know, that was a conversation where it was that type of thing. Roe's a tough guy that he knows, mm-hmm. everybody knows politics in this town just as well as just about anybody. Even he was that hit him, and he just couldn't get past it. When I hear it, when I hear her, those words coming out of her mouth, I imagine her sitting in a room being asked that question from like around the room, and she's on a chair, she's spinning around, she's got to answer it. She's got to answer it. She's got to.
I mean, prep.
It's prep. It just sounds like it's rote. It's just something that she's practiced over and over again, and it's so disingenuous. So doesn't do anything for me.
Well, there's no question that Ms. Fox is a great politician. You know, she's good at that. She's well prepared, and I've sat on, you know, been in at this point now countless rooms, seen countless forums, and heard her ask these questions countless times, and she is able to, frankly, not answer the question every time. As you know, at the Tribune Ed Board, you all went after for about 35 minutes, and she was able to essentially not answer the question for that time.
The problem is you pull that chicken bleep stuff with a real news organization, and chances are you're not going to get the endorsement. And guess what? She did not get the endorsement. She was endorsed before. She was not endorsed this time. And she was admonished in the editorial page and by other journalists. However, you do this on TV. This is why TV loves, politicians love TV. And if you're elected, you're going to love TV. You're not going to want to come sit with me for half an hour where I
don't sell yourself short, friend. I'm sure I'll come back.
But the thing is that they don't, because you can dominate the microphone, keep talking, and walk away smiling.
Well, you know, John, I'm not a natural politician. I just know what I want to do as state's attorney. So I'm happy to talk to anybody about that, about what we can do better on criminal justice reform and how we can get after the gun crime epidemic and get into politics.
You know, I hear this all the time, and this seems to be the standard Democratic talking point. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Gun violence. Guess what, prospective Mr. Prosecutor? I don't know. I never counted all the guns in the Cook County suburbs, but I guarantee you there's more than one. Right?
Yeah.
A lot of guns out there.
Yeah.
But people aren't slaughtering each other out there. The slaughter is taking place on the west side, east of Garfield Park, and on the south side, right?
Well, we have to get it, but we have to get after the illegal gun supply that's coming into the city.
But I call it gang war, because that's what it is. Am I wrong? Is that what it is?
Well, you have to, I think if you get after the instrument that's being used there of the guns, those things will certainly go together. I mean, last year we had 492 murders here, you know, versus 254 in Los Angeles and 318 in New York. And, you know, murder is up 42% so far this year. Granted, we're only 2 months into the year, so I don't want to extrapolate too much into that.
How many shootings? We don't know. I mean, I can't say, but people are getting shot all the time. We have mass shootings all the time. We don't want to call them mass shootings, but that's what they are, like in the convenience store just the other day.
Yeah, which that was a horrifying video.
Thing in China. What about that thing in Chinatown where, what about the idea that I've been working, not, I don't need a pat on the head or anything, but we've been working on it. I've been writing about it. The Tribune investigative people have been writing about it. The idea of home electronic monitoring, putting, I forgot the stats now. I used to have them right at hand, but hundreds of murderers, shooters, sexual assault, alleged sexual assault perpetrators, on and on home monitoring. And every weekend, we see a story where some kid gets shot to death by somebody on home electronic home monitoring. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's supposed to be at home, but he's really riding a bike or he's driving a car and he's got this electro home monitor plugged into the cigarette lighter, if there is such a thing anymore in cars. How does that work?
Well, in part, you know, electronic monitoring, there are two types. You know, one is the one where there's a transponder plugged in and that person has to stay within a certain distance of the transponder, which, you know, that has some flaws, which is kind of what you're getting at. But the other ones are GPS based, and clearly we have to be moving to use the GPS based ones to avoid some of the things that you're talking about. But even at a broader level, I mean, Sheriff Dart, when electronic monitoring was something that came up, talked about how it is a program that is designed for nonviolent offenders and drug offenders.
He liked it at first. They wanted to reduce the size of the jail.
Yeah. No.
Too overcrowded, and now it's almost empty. It's a ghost town.
Yeah, no, but so I think electronic monitoring is a good thing for people that are not a danger to the community or they feel like they need some watching. And in fact, I remember when I was working bond court back in 2008, when one person accused of murder was put on home monitoring, first of all, the sheriff's office was up in arms, and what they would do is they would park a car in front of that person's house during that time. This was such a big deal. And now I know there's at least 50 people that are charged with murder or attempt murder that are on home monitoring now, which that doesn't make sense.
Where did the people who are charged with murder or attempted mm-hmm. murder, and then they on home monitoring, or they're released on because if you're the state's attorney, you should know that there's been a change already. Mm-hmm. It's not called bond court. It's called I-bond court.
I have heard people refer to it
because
as that.
They just, yeah. I want to go. And people actually do call it. I want to go to I-bond yeah. court. Excuse me? So you can walk out? But that's what it's called now because of this policy. Where the violence that takes place mm-hmm. by these people that do are released early. Where does it happen? Does it happen in Lake Forest? Is that where it happens? Lake Forest and or Winnetka?
Well, you certainly hear about it more on the south and the west sides, obviously.
I bet you that it doesn't happen in Winnetka or Wilmette. I just got a feeling.
No, but nonetheless, I don't think we should change the standards about who gets electronic monitoring. I think if somebody's a danger to the community, I think that person should go to jail.
Exactly.
But if they're not a danger to the community, I think we have to fundamentally change the way we prosecute drug crime here, for example. The fact that Cook County Jail is a giant mental health clinic is not a good thing either.
Agreed.
And we have to be working on that side. And I think to the extent that we can focus our efforts, we can do it better in terms of how we're going to handle drug crime is a public health crisis going forward. And if the city can be successful in reopening the mental health clinics, our office will work closely with them to make sure that we're getting folks the right treatment. And I think it's important to keep that in line as well.
Given all that's going on, the I-bond court, the release of shooters, the home monitoring, the Jesse Smollett business. If Kim Fox is reelected, what is that going to say to the people of Cook County?
You know, I really just don't think that's going to happen. So, I can't, it's hard for me to even go there. I am confident that as I continue to go all over this county, you know, talking about how we can do criminal justice reform better, and what we can do about getting to some of the root causes of the gun crime problem. And like I said, really prosecute public corruption out of that office. I'm confident that we'll be successful in our campaign.
So you're going to have are you going to hire guys like Jeff Carlin, or maybe you want Jeff to work the earphones and listen to Alderman talk about landing the tuna. Get it, Jeff? Are you ready for
that? Yeah, hopefully the language will continue to be that colorful.
Another Alderman talking about Viagra and strip clubs and stuff.
And some of that. But, what we're going to do when we talk about public corruption is we are very quickly going to establish a close relationship with a lot of these inspectors general that exist, and as a former public corruption prosecutor, I know what the cases that come and look like. But now you have a situation where they all go to the U.S. attorney's office and they'll take one or two out of 10. And then they come to the state's attorney's office and they're presumably not taking any of them. But I want those inspectors general to know that we are going to be very open to taking those cases because I know how well they're worked up. Oftentimes they will come in with witnesses and bank records that show all the money, for example, leaving a bank account. And all then we'll have to do is get a grand jury subpoena for the perpetrator's bank records, lock somebody in the grand jury, and it's ready to go for indictment. And we will be ready to take on those cases. But additionally, we are going to have a mechanism whereby if real government whistleblowers want to come forward, that they will be able to come directly to the state's attorney's office to do that.
The idea that state's attorney would investigate corruption is a dangerous one, sir. There were state's attorneys in the past who tried that,
mm-hmm.
and City Hall freaked out. You know why? City Hall, the fifth floor of City Hall, for some reason, we've had four governors go to prison. We've had people investigated all over the state. City Council and the county government, but we've never had a mayor investigated by or indicted by the federal government. That tells you that City Hall is a corruption-free zone, and that the fifth floor of City Hall must have the magic fairy dust of reform on it. No?
Well, I will say that we are going to be ready and able to prosecute public corruption wherever we see it in this county, because I am going to be an independent state's attorney. If that's going to freak some people out, so be it. And we're prepared to, do that. And, when I was an assistant state's attorney, I prosecuted a welfare director in Hanover Township who embezzled from there, a village accountant in Harwood Heights who embezzled money, prosecuted a few city employees, prosecuted a county employee. And at that point, I was merely one, one assistant state's attorney. And now I'm excited about the fact that we will be able to have the mechanism to really dedicate significant resources of our office to get after the public corruption that we know is out there and is being prosecuted in an unprecedented federal level at the federal level, but yet at the state level, nothing now. And that is going to significantly change on December 1.
So let's say you win. Let's say you get in. How do you work with Toni Preckwinkle? I mean, you're going to be under a vice because you're not her selected candidate. So that is going to be roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. You know that's going to happen. I mean, how do you bridge that political gap? Because like you said, you're not a political guy. This isn't your day job, obviously.
No. So, I am certainly going to, after I win the election, I'm certainly going to reach out to the president and extend the olive branch of, hey, let's work on the things together that we agree on. And I think that she's going to find that we agree on much more than she thinks she does, that she thinks we will based on our criminal justice reform initiatives. And, I'm also going to be steadfast in what we're going to do with regard to violent criminals and what we're going to do with regard to public corruption.
And yeah, but
I'll have to be strong in that.
That's interesting. But, let me ask you this in terms of, I've heard you reference the machine, right? Mm-hmm. You've referenced it. But most people of Chicago get used to a characterization of the machine.
Yeah.
You say machine politician, they think a guy, an old guy, pink skin, pinstripe suit, cigar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They think a guy like a
Dick Tracy villain or something.
No, not like a two-faced or something like that. No. But a guy like double-breasted suit, slick back hair, like an old-timey Verdoliak or Burke, Madigan, and so forth. But let me offer this. Cook County Board President Preckwinkle is neither of these, none of these things. She's African American. She came up as a progressive, and I remember when she was so progressive when Rich Daley reached down and helped her take out Tim Evans, who's now her buddy from the city council. She's African American, so apparently progressive, or at least of the left. The progressive unions that always hated, railed about the machine, are with her. Many of the elites of Chicago, wealthy elites, are with her. Isn't that a machine, sir? Isn't the Preckwinkle? She's chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party. She picks judges. She picks the state's attorney, the public defender, and she tells Tim Evans how much he can. Oh, you can't spend any more on paperclips, Tim, because I have your budget in my hand. Is that not a machine? Is the Preckwinkle machine?
Well, I certainly think it's unquestionably, if there is a business that does business with the county, if that business were to support me, they would be potentially running into some reprisal. The same is true. The same is true with a union that had a lot of county employees. They would be in fear of that too. And that's why I've had to work to build a platform independent of that. And thankful that, been able to do that, and our message seems to be resonating.
You'll be, before this airs, you'll have another debate, but I want with the other candidates. I wonder, with the candidates that aren't doing so well, you know, you're doing well, you're close to Kim Fox, are you going to ask Bob Fioretti to just step down and not, like, hey Bob, why don't you just sit this one out so that I can have Kim Fox?
No, it is. I don't want to say a whole lot bad about Bob, but he hasn't had a lot of electoral success as of late.
I don't want to say anything bad about him.
Yeah,
either,
I am confident that as we continue to go all over the county and get our message out, that we will be successful and that the math very much works out for us. And I'm excited about that. And I also know how people who know me and people who know Ms. Fox overwhelmingly prefer me. I just have to maximize the size of that group. And it's also plainly obvious that if somebody wants a change in the state's attorney's office, if they're not happy with the status quo of politically connected people getting better deals, that they have another choice. They can vote for me. And I am very much in favor of criminal justice reform. I am going to get after the gun crime epidemic. But perhaps most importantly, you know, I have built a independent platform that can take on, and I'm the only candidate who can take on the machine and win.
What about Soros?
Yeah, you know, John, they have, I've been running for 6 months saying the same message wherever I go. And in that time, they have come after my family, my donors, heck, my client, Candace Clark. They've come after my military record. And it hasn't really gotten anywhere. So it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with here in the next 2 weeks, but we'll be ready. And we're going to be getting our message out all over the county regardless.
She got $2 million from a Soros PAC.
Yeah.
George Soros PAC. And when I write about it, the left says, oh, Cass, you're conspiracy theory. How dare you make it up about George Soros? I'm not making it up. It's in the Illinois Board of Election funding.
Well, it is worth noting that the purpose of the Pat Pack was initially to support Kim Fox. You know, that was, and I don't think they were getting anywhere. And then they changed the purpose of that pack to oppose Bill Conway.
Right.
Which I think shows they saw that our message is resonating everywhere. And we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple of weeks, but we'll be ready.
But you're also funded by your dad. And your dad is the founder of Carlyle Group, and a columnist in the city of Chicago has gone after the Carlyle Group and its friends, from Bill Cellini to Bob Schillander and all these other players on the Republican and Democratic side who tried to play politics in Illinois, some of it corruptly. How do you deal with parallel group criticism.
Yeah, you know, I love my dad. He's been a great dad, of course. You know, been a supportive father. But I've never worked at that firm. You know, I've spent my entire the bulk of my career in public service. You know, defending our country and in our military, as well as working at the state's attorney's office. And when I'm elected, I'm not gonna owe anybody anything. And the fact of the matter is, I am running against an entrenched political machine.
A famous political family, the father once said, if a father can't help his own son, you could just kiss my... And I think Bob Crawford at WBBM created the phrase mistletoe. Right, Jeff Carlin?
Yes.
I don't think the old man said mistletoe.
No, I don't think so. I think this is the story goes.
Right. So?
Yeah, so it's worth noting, very different situation between that and this, in the sense that my father is not local. He's largely retired from his firm. He stepped down as head of his firm. And it's hard to imagine any kind of nexus between that firm and the state's attorney's office. But of course, if anything were to come up involving my dad or my dad's firm before the state's attorney's office, of course I would recuse myself, because that, as one should when something involving their parents comes before the office.
So if your dad's former chief of staff made a phone call and said, hey, there's somebody that I kind of have a friend of a friend likes, you know.
John Cass, the lounge singer, has just been accused of creating a fake hate crime where he's created a fake hate crime, and he's got a noose around his neck, and Cass fought off the haters with the tuna fish sandwich and a cell phone. It was the coldest day of the year. That scenario?
Exactly. That kind of thing, yeah. John Cass, the lounge singer. I don't know about that, but
hey, baby. But,
yeah, no, I'm, who knows? Maybe don't give up on it, but you know, we're not going to be at the state's attorney's office. We're not going to be taking those kind of calls. We haven't. We've built a platform where we don't have to, and we don't have to give unequal justice to anybody.
That's what really frustrates me. That she took Kim Fox takes the call from Tina Chen, the chief of staff of Michelle Obama, and it's mentioned. You know, I mention it a lot. It's not really mentioned a lot though in Chicago media as much as I think it should be. Roe mentions it. Why is that? Are there certain subjects or people that are off limits politically that we can't talk about?
What do you mean? Tina Chen doesn't come up?
Yeah. The Michelle's chief of staff.
Yeah.
For God's sake. She wasn't like the dog catcher in Crestwood.
No, I have no idea why Ms. Fox took the call, if that's what you mean.
Right? Yeah, yeah. What is the canon?
I think the people know pretty soundly that Tina Chen reached out, but I don't, you know, maybe I'm so knee deep in this campaign that I think that.
When you get a call like that, people will call you. Yeah. What are you supposed to say?
Well, I'll say, thank you for letting us know. We're going to treat this case like every other case.
You know, and don't call me again.
Yeah, thanks for calling, because we don't give special deals out of here. And that's,
you could say what Franny Spielman used to say when people would be critical of her on the phone and try to muscle her, like, verbally. Mm-hmm. She would say, we're rolling now. You want to continue?
maybe I'll have to use that. I'm a fairly polite person, but I'm firm in my values. So I think by politely saying, thanks for the call, but we're going to be treating this case like we handle every other case, should be able to get the message across. And the fact of the matter is, because when I get elected, I'm not going to owe anybody anything except the voters. So I can make them that promise that that's how we're going to be able to treat those cases.
Bill Conway, let's see. We talked about everything. We talked about all the issues. I want all my friends of the left who hate me to realize that we did ask Kim Fox to be on. Because there's nothing like hanging out with Kim, too. But we're still working on it. But, one thing, Kim, you don't get to come on right before the election, the day before, and then give me those BS answers. Okay? If you got real answers to give me about why you took the call and what you want, then we'll see. Bill Conway, good luck, man.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me on. Thanks, Jeff. Absolutely.
Bill Conway, candidate for the office of Cook County State's Attorney. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokan Show. For Christopher Columbus, who may have been Greek, I bid you sad farewell. And for me, John Cass, lover of books, columnist of the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board, this is the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.